I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey y'all, welcome back to part three here on the Wednesday, June 29th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas podcast presented by Blue Wire Pods. As we wrap up here on this Wednesday edition of the pod, thank you guys as always for making the Chase Thomas podcast part of your daily listen here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. And I greatly appreciate it. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Just make sure you're subscribed and get access to all of my episodes every single day, new kinds of sports content all across this very feed. So make sure you're locked in so you never miss any of our episodes. We had Virginia coverage and then an interview with Jared Dickey of the Tennessee Volunteers baseball team on previous episodes of today's show. So check that out, part one and part two, as we wrap up part three here on today's program with Fangraph's John Taylor. He comes on this show at this time every single week to talk all things Major League Baseball. We talked about Freddie Freeman's return to Atlanta over the weekend, Bryce Harper being lost for what may be the season for the Phillies. We had some Angels Mariners takes on that brawl from the weekend. We had Santana, who gets traded to the Mariners, and why the Mariners should continue making buy now trades, the Royals, and just the rough situation they're in. And then a really good piece on Logan Webb of the San Francisco Giants over on Fangraphs.com. Go subscribe to Fangraphs.com if you are not already. It's a very good Major League Baseball website that you should be subscribed to if you are not already. Make sure you check us out on YouTube. You can check all of our videos out and all of our full episodes, clips, all kinds of video content over on our YouTube page, youtube.com/ChaseThomasPodcast. Like and subscribe and all that good stuff there. Read me at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com, sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Type in your email, become a subscriber today to read all my stuff. You can email this very program at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. All right, part three as we wrap up here on a Wednesday with John Taylor. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. All right, y'all.
We're back here on another edition of the Chase Thomas podcast, taping this late on a Tuesday. John Taylor is here of Fangraphs.com, as he is every week at this time. John Taylor, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Not too bad. I just love the sound this week because John is on location and it sounds like he is in the studio where we are going to talk about the important issues here.
You need to get all that crazy eggshell soundproofing material for your studio so it can just sound like, you know, so it sounds like you recorded like Dark Side of the Moon in there or something. Just Pink Floyd level. It's like sound production.
There you go. I mean, eventually, yeah, I will do the soundproof, but that's the next house type thing. That's a future home buy, like post-marriage thing where we get the, I guess current marriage, post-marriage sounds like after a divorce or something.
Yeah, that makes it sound like when you become a cool divorced
Yeah, that's not dad, what I'm saying there
your own
at all.
Man cave where it's literally, it's just a podcast studio.
very sad. I don't want that.
That's pretty depressing.
Yeah, I don't want that. I don't want that, John. John Taylor, though, we have today in National Pastime. Are you ready for today's National Pastime?
I'm always ready for the National Pastime.
It's one of my favorite things. I love perusing it every single day, but especially on Tuesdays, because we get to talk about it. And there's some names here. There's some names. There's some stuff that you're going to like for this one, John. 1918, June 28th. Quote, after moving up to the mound for a possible cutoff play, White Sox backstop Ray Schalk continues to second base, taking a throw from first baseman Chick Gandiel to double up Brown's Ray Demet, who failed to retouch second base, attempting to get back to first. The play makes the future Hall of Famer the first catcher to make a put out at every bag, a feat not accomplished again until 1964, when Johnny Roseborough tags Willie Mays out in a rundown play when the infielder tries to steal second. So from 1918 to 1964, a catcher did not make a putout at every bag.
That doesn't really surprise me. Also, just in reading up a little about Ray Schalk, he was apparently the greatest defensive catcher of his time, which is notable.
Yeah.
And also was one of the best hitters for the 1919 Black Sox in the World Series. Apparently, he was such an honest and honorable person that the gamblers who approached the White Sox about throwing games never even bothered talking to him.
There you go. John, we could talk about Freddie Freeman moving on from his old representation to representing himself temporarily. We'll see what happens there. But, I mean, a rough weekend. I mean, the Dodgers obviously won the series, and Acuna's out again, and he's not playing tonight in Philadelphia as they start that series. But that was just a weird one. I don't really have much to say on it. It's just
kind of sad because the ultimate kind of point of, I mean, leave aside all the weirdness of the change in representation of, you know, Clayton Kershaw's comments about hoping that the Dodgers aren't second fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the sadness to me that Freddie Freeman just wanted to stay in Atlanta. It's so obvious that his first, second, third, all the way down choice would have been stay in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he's put out a statement since that said, you know, a lot of this is just processing a lot of emotions that he very clearly had not been able to process, I think in part because he signed with the Dodgers relatively late, and then the lockout stuff was going on, so which I buy, and I can understand that too. Like, his time in Atlanta was very, very, you know, important and meaningful, and obviously he went out on the highest possible note, and, you know, it doesn't surprise me either that he wanted to stay. I think something you and I talked about during the offseason is the idea that there was probably an offer that the Braves could have made that maybe wouldn't have been as big as what he took from the Dodgers, or wouldn't have been as big necessarily as he wanted, but that all things considered, he probably would have taken, I think. I mean, I don't know, because the question to me about the representation stuff is, does that mean that the Braves had an offer out to Freeman that his agents rejected without him being able to weigh in or what? I guess I'm curious. That to me is the most curious thing, is what does that change in representation mean with regards to Freddie Freeman and the Braves, especially because he's made some very vague comments about seeing things from the other side now and whatnot. But either way, it's sad, and I have to imagine, especially for Dodgers, clearly the Dodgers themselves are not super thrilled with how this all played out, given Kershaw's comments and everything.
Well, that's what I was also going to say, is that when you talk to MLB guys and talking to college guys, like, baseball teams are a tight-knit group, man, and they spend a lot of time on the road together. They talk a lot. They're closer than most other sports leagues.
I would agree with that, yeah.
So when they publicly are like, I don't know, man.
Especially Kershaw. Kershaw's not the type, I think, to do that. And so I definitely, if you're both on the Dodgers and if you're a Dodgers fan, you probably come out of this weekend feeling like, what the hell, dude? Do you really not want to be here that badly? Like, And I know Freeman has said too that he and Kershaw talked, and, you know, they're good, and I imagine that this probably will not come up again during the season since they're not going to go back to Atlanta. But boy, is it really going to become a story if the Dodgers and the Braves meet in the playoffs, and in particular, if Freeman has a bad series. You know, that's. And that's the other thing, too. If he has a bad year, and he's had an okay year, certainly not as good a year as I think he usually has, but, you know, if he has a down year by his standards or by, you know, by what the Dodgers are paying him, I think there are going to be a lot of fans who are going to turn on him pretty hard and be like, you just clearly don't want to be here, do you? And again, that's just what makes me sad is that, yeah, Freeman, I mean, I don't think Freeman doesn't want to be in LA. It's just very clear he wants to be in Atlanta first and foremost, and that he wanted to stay there and he wanted to finish his career there. And it didn't work out or play out because of whatever reasons. And this is the weird end result where we have a player on one team talking publicly about how much the other team meant to him.
Yeah, I think it's one of those when you read the stuff with Chipper where like Freddie and Chipper are super close, right? And I think Chipper told him, he's like, you're playing with fire here. And I think this was one where it was like the combination of, I think the fact that he moved on from his agent tells me that there was a, like there, I would love to have been a fly on the wall once the Matt Olson trade went through. Because remember, that happened first. Mm-hmm. And once that happened, I just imagine what that call was like, where they're like, whoa. I get the sense that Freeman was blindsided by that.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing with the representation thing. It's not mm-hmm. so much that they turned down an offer without him knowing it, but that they had, I meant maybe their
they
strategy
waited too
was,
long.
We're going to wait them out. They'll come back with a better offer. Instead, they went to Plan B with Olson, mm-hmm. and like you said, Freeman gets blindsided by it, and presumably, I mean, I don't know. And maybe just being back in Atlanta just, you know, made him feel more and more like, hey, I made a, like, these guys really screwed me. This is where I wanted to be, and they did not pursue the best plan for me. Which I think
he wanted to do the Chipper thing. Like, I think he saw himself as a lifelong Brave. Like, I think that was it. There's a reason that him and Chipper are close.
I would gather that every Braves fan also thought Freddie Freeman was going to be a lifelong Brave.
Yeah.
I gather that the Braves front office probably had hopes that he would be a lifelong mm-hmm. Brave. I mean, I'm pretty
That's
sure
why
they
the situation
did not.
Is so weird, and it's just so unique.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the Braves didn't have any interest in making him the kind of offer either that he got from the Dodgers or the kind of offer he was looking for overall. But yeah, that you're I like your theory in particular that Freeman and his camp got blindsided by the Olson trade because they overplayed their hand or they were just not nearly aware enough of what was going on in the background when it came to because I think that's something else we talked about too, is that like when it came to replacing Freeman in Atlanta, the free agent market had zero good options, and the Braves had zero good options internally. So I imagine
so they couldn't wait on a Matt Olson trade. That tells me that they made that trade because they thought Matt Olson was getting moved within like a 48-hour window or something.
Probably.
Like,
and I would wager that Freeman's representation probably felt going into the offseason, hey, what other option do these guys have?
Like, right.
It's either us or, you know, or they have to move prospects and in for a big trade and like. And, you know, maybe they figured, oh, maybe Olson's a possibility, but I you know everyone offseason, oh, Matt Olson's going to be a Yankee. Matt Olson is going to be, you know, might be a Dodger. I think that I guess
or they'll only
that's
do
the
that if
they,
we
consider.
Tell them no, right? Like, it's like they'll pivot to Matt Olson if we tell them.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. That Freddie Freeman was the Braves' number one option and that they were only going to go get someone like Olson if Freeman flat out said, I am not coming back or this offer is not good enough or whatever it is. But I guess now it's fun to think of the alternate universe where Freeman stays in Atlanta and the Dodgers trade for Matt Olson instead.
Ooh.
But I don't know. Maybe they could just swap him. Who says no?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. Matt Olson's parents who are able to go to all these games.
I was going to say, locally. Local Georgia boy Matt Olson would like to stay in Georgia.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's one of those. Now, the hilarious thing is if he had signed the mega one-year deal, if he had done like the Carlos Correa thing in L.A., there is no question that Freddie Freeman is an Atlanta Brave next winter. Like, that's the whole thing. Is like, he's locked in. I don't see a trade. So Braves fans who are like, he's so sad. Like, maybe they can trade back for him. I don't see any path to that happening.
I mean, there's the only way Freddie Freeman comes back to the Braves is on one of those one-day contracts to retire a Brave.
Like, it's over. Like, he's...
It's over, There's Matt Olson is the first baseman there for the next... How long was that extension? 7 years? 8 years?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so he is the first baseman there for the duration. Freeman's career is probably not going to go beyond this contract with the Dodgers. So, yeah, I think, unfortunately for Freddie Freeman, I don't think he gets to return to Atlanta as an active player. But I do think, I mean, it's very clear that, like, whenever his career is over, he is almost certainly going to go back to Atlanta in some degree or capacity. And will probably get some kind of nice send-off and whatever else. And
he goes to the Hall of Fame as a Brave. I'm going to go ahead
and that's
guess.
The thing, too. If he does make it to the Hall of Fame, it will definitely be as a Brave. So, yeah, I think it's just sad to see because, you know, it's a nice reminder, too. These guys are humans, too. Like, mm-hmm. they're not robots. They're not, you know, baseball-playing automatons. Like, they have real feelings and they have things they care about. And, you know, mm-hmm. that to me is just the sad part of the Freeman stuff. This is a dude who had real feelings about where he was and very clearly wanted to be there. And, you know, I'm not saying let's all feel bad for the guy who got $140 million or whatever it was from the Dodgers and gets to play for a World Series contender, but, like, you know, and it's obviously it's not just the team too. It's the community he was a part of. It's the family he raised there. It's the whatever friends he had there. It's whatever mm-hmm. It's whatever he particularly liked about living in Atlanta or in Georgia. I mean, let's be fair. Freddie Freeman wasn't living in Atlanta.
He was
really in like downtown Atlanta.
Well, not downtown, but he wasn't in like the suburbs. I think he was okay. Sandy Springs.
Where do most Braves players live?
Well, here's the thing, John. It depends. Like, they're kind of scattered because, like, I don't want to out any neighborhoods, but I know of several that back in the day I knew were Andrew Jones and Glavin and guys like that. I'm pretty sure they were all in the same neighborhood of one I know particularly well. But I would say if I had to guess where the majority of them lived, it would be Sandy Springs, Buckhead, somewhere outside of it. That would be my guess.
I'd be curious, too, if how much that changed, like, once the team moved out of from their old home into now where they are in Cobb County. But, either way, it's you know, it's, again, nice. It's a good reminder that these guys are human beings and have human feelings and, you know, that there are real, you know, they're real people, so to speak. And, yeah,
I mean, it also just shows that just it's a dance, man. With
it's
agents,
cutthroat.
With you, like it's
cutthroat as hell. Like this is a good reminder too. This is a business for all these teams. They don't operate on emotion, sentimentality. You know, unless you're the Cardinals, I guess.
And that's what Chipper tried, I think, to convey to Freddie was that like Alex is going to have to do something. Like the Braves are like they cannot do this dance with you. Like they cannot be left at the altar and then you sign with the Dodgers because they're not going to do the number in years, and then Olsen gets traded and then the Braves are just screwed. Like that's the other
part of it too. Like you're right that Atlanta had to make moves to take care of itself, you know, and it could not work necessarily on Freddie Freeman's timetable. Mm-hmm. And I know you and I had argued it's like why wouldn't the Braves just give Freddie Freeman what he wants? He's literally Freddie Freeman. Granted they ended up in a better scenario at least when it comes to a guy that they, you know, presumably feel way better about long term in Matt Olsen, but it's these things happen sometimes and it's a real shame because it's again it's human beings who are, you know, these guys are human beings and they, you know, they're the ones who have to deal with the fallout, so to speak.
Absolutely. John, we have some other Major League Baseball stuff that I want to pick your brain on.
Yes.
Bryce Harper. Because he cannot have nice things. This just bummed me out. Like, Bryce Harper, who will not be in the lineup for the Braves, Phillies. It looks like he's gone for the year, right? Like, this is it. Like, I don't think he comes back this year.
So the most recent thing was said he's going to need surgery, and they're guessing it's going to be about a six-week recovery period. So there is a... I would say, given that timetable, you'd be looking at him back for the month of September, if all goes well and his rehab goes well. Obviously, any setbacks, I think you'd be right, would leave him done for the year, but
or if the Phillies fall out of contention,
right? Yeah, if the Phillies fall out, I mean, I think he would still come back even if they fell out of contention, assuming that there's no risk in letting him play. Just because I don't think Bryce Harper is the kind of guy who wants to just take a month off at the end of the season for no reason.
That's a clown idea, bro.
Yeah, it's tough. I guess
the
good news for the Phillies is, I mean, you know, we're talking about. In the course of, you know, let's say 6 to 8 weeks without Harper, you know, maybe that's whoever takes his place, maybe that's a 2-win downgrade overall. Mm. That's not huge in the grand scheme of things. Obviously, the bigger problem is the Phillies, every win is deeply, deeply important, given that they are more wild card contenders than they are divisional contenders. And obviously, given the problems they've already had with regards to both the out, although I say problems with the outfield, although Harper was very clearly not going to go back into the outfield this season, barring something strange. So, at the very least, it doesn't hurt their outfield any worse, but now they obviously have the one more lineup spot that they need to fill, and right now those at-bats are going to go to Matt Vierling, Oscar Mercado, Odubel Herrera. Like, that's really, really not good. If anything, it puts a lot of pressure on the Phillies, and I was like, you got to go out and get a bat if you want to stay in this. And which is also complicated because, well, where are you going to put that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Again, Harper was taking up the deal. I mean, I guess the idea would be go out and get an outfielder. And I think, you know, a guy like a Tommy Pham or Andrew Benintendi or something along those lines would probably make the most sense, because not only is that, you know, an extra bat, but that also means you can put Nick Castellanos back at DH where he belongs. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's the thing. Depending how quickly the Phillies respond to this, because, you know, they know Harper's gone for at least the next 2 months. And depending what they do in replacing Harper, because this isn't something they can do internally. You know, they don't have the bats in their system to replace Bryce Harper. And, like, no one can replace Bryce Harper, but they can at least go out and get a guy who is above league average, and more importantly, who can play defense in the outfield. So they can put Castellanos back at DH. But, yeah, they do need to move quickly, though, because, I mean, this is, like I said, this is not a situation where the Braves are not the Yankees. They don't have a 12-game lead at the top of the division with guaranteed playoff odds and, you know, and whatever else. This is a team that is, as of right now, 8 games back in the East, 3 behind Atlanta for second, and, you know, it's in the thick of the wild card race. Our postseason odds at Fangraphs right now have them 30.7%.
Not
which
terrible.
Is not terrible, but it is the lowest odds of any of the, I guess you could say, the 8 contending NL teams. Everyone else is 4% or below. So they have a hard road to climb, right? Or they have a hard road to walk right now. And on the plus side, unless the Marlins go on a big run or
the Giants really figure,
I mean, that's kind of the thing. Like, they don't have any competition for that last playoff spot. The Marlins are the next closest team in the standings to them, and they're 6 games under 500 and 5 games behind the Phillies in the standings. You know, the other side of it, though, is that if the Phillies collapse from this point forward, well, I mean, I guess even then they'd probably still keep that postseason spot because, again, there's no one else in the NL beyond them who's really any threat to capture that. But it definitely makes their margin for error smaller. And like you said, if Harper's gone for the season, then any realistic hope of doing anything at all in the playoffs is gone, too. But
shout out to Harper for having a good attitude about it and didn't take, like, because it wasn't intentional what happened.
No, it wasn't.
That was just bad.
I mean,
luck.
It's Blake Snell pitching to a lefty. Like,
yeah.
No way it's intentional. That dude just doesn't know where the ball is going 30% of the time. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's the good news for the Phillies. Is as bad of a loss as this is, you know, they're not being challenged for that. They're not, or better said, sorry, because there are only the. Wait, how many? I can't believe I'm asking this, like, halfway through the season. How many playoff spots are there in every league now? 6?
Is it 6?
Yeah, so I guess in that mind, like, on the one hand, the Phillies do not have competition behind them.
Wait, is it 7? I thought it was 7, and somebody gets a bye. I thought it was the... Am I misremembering that? I thought it was 7, and
you know what's funny? Amidst all the lockout stuff, this is one of the things I never really got full clarity on, is what the actual playoff structure looks like now.
Am I misremembering that? I thought it was, like, the number one overall seed gets a bye. Am I misremembering that?
Yeah, the number one seed gets a bye. The third best division winner plays the last team in, while the best and second best wild card winners play each other. So 3 division winners, then the 3 wild cards. So right now, Philly is out of a wild card spot. The good news for them, like I said, is that there is no real competition behind them. You know, unless the Marlins go off on a super crazy hot streak, you know, they're not going to get passed by anyone. Problem is now they have to make up that ground for that wild card in that wild card chase with, I believe, the current wild card teams are the Giants, the Cardinals, and the Braves right now. And as of right now, they are decently behind. I mean, they have the same number of wins as the Giants. They have 2 more losses because they played an uneven number of games, so they're pretty much right there tied for that last wild card spot. But yeah, it's not ideal. It's real. Or no, sorry, they're not tied for that last wild. I forgot.
It's been a mess.
I forgot about the Padres. Okay, so you got the Padres
are in. Like, they've already
the Padres
that
is the number one wild card team. Then the Braves number 2. Then the Cardinals number 3. The Giants are just outside of the postseason picture, and then the Phillies behind them.
Right.
So really, at this point, you can look at it as Phillies wise, you know. The Giants are your number one competition for a playoff spot right now, along with whoever the number 2 NL Central team is. I'm sure we'll talk about this as we get further through this summer as to which of those 3 teams looks like the best bet, or which of those 3 teams look like the best bets for those final 2 spots. But yeah, the Phillies already on the outside looking in, not ideal to lose their best hitter right now. And yeah, it's just tough. I really think Time is of the essence for them. I don't think this is something where you should wait till the deadline to try to find the guy you want. No, if you know there's a guy you want, go out and get him. You know, this next month, but leading up to the trade deadline, all those games count just as much as the games on the other side of the trade deadline, too. You know, and there are going to be other teams looking for outfield help. You know, steal a March if you can. Go out and get Pham or Benintendi. The cost for those guys should not be particularly high. You know, those are both...
Well, just make sure that Tommy Pham is not in any fantasy leagues for...
Definitely make sure Tommy Pham doesn't join your team's fantasy football league. Because, if anything, he also just doesn't seem to understand how fantasy football works on a general level. But... Also, I gotta say, like, trading for the dude who slapped someone over a fantasy football trade or waiver wire claim would make Pham a really good Philly fit.
That's
on
true.
The other hand, Andrew Benintendi's name is literally Benintendi, which also an incredibly good Philly fit.
Like, but I can just see Pham appearing on Always Sunny in Philadelphia way quicker.
Do you know how disappointing it is to me that Vinny Pasquantino is not a Philly? Like, how did that not happen? Also, I just have to shout this out now while I still can, because it just reminded me. If you're in the greater Philadelphia area on July 22nd, which is a Friday,
okay,
the Phillies are hosting Italian Heritage Celebration Night.
Inarticulate Italian noises come to life.
Yes, I am debating. I am really, really considering going down for that, because that has the potential to be the single funniest in-game celebration of anything that Major League Baseball has ever done, is basically inviting the entirety of Philly's Italian-American community to come on out and just be stereotypes. I hope they just lean into every single stereotype.
I think you should.
Like, after every strikeout, like, a batter just has to throw the bat to the ground and just, like, start gesticulating wildly in the air and, like, yelling at, like, have them yell at the umpire like they're soccer players, like, just get right in their face and just be like, oh,
I think
man.
You should have to walk into, like, with a pastrami sandwich to the box.
Yes.
Like, that's part of it. Like,
yes, or wearing a tank top of some kind.
Yes. Like the unbuttoned, like just the unbuttoned shirt with the
tank.
Honestly,
the more you look like you could have been a background character, like, your ticket price should be determined by how much you look like a character on The Sopranos. Are they going to have, I would love to see if they have, like any of the actors from that show come out to throw a first pitch. I would genuinely love that. Even though that's not, I guess it's not Philly, it's New Jersey, which...
Well, I mean, there's a lot of Philly fans in New Jersey, man.
There are, but the thing is that the Sopranos is more North Jersey. It's North Central Jersey. It's New York Jersey. Philly Jersey is, Philly New Jersey is a whole different thing.
I'm not going to pretend to have a good grasp on that.
This is our weird mid-Atlantic thing. Jersey belongs to...
Well, this is your bread and butter, man. I can tell you about, like, South Georgia and North Florida.
And I can tell you about North Jersey and Central Jersey and South Jersey.
There you go. Yeah, I have no concept for any of that.
I apologize to your Jersey listener. I'm not even from Jersey. I just like taking shots.
I just love Jersey. I wish I could say that. Like, that's a fun thing to say. Like, I'm from Jersey.
Yeah, I'm from Jersey, huh?
Yeah, like, that's just, like, a cool thing to say. We apologize.
I'm just it's just, I can't, it's just the one that's lean into the joke by having Italian heritage celebration. Like, how can I not enjoy that? It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. I encourage everyone in the Philadelphia area to go to that game if you can. And please tell me how it is. If there's, like, a free shirt giveaway, like, please send me the shirt. I hope it is just, like, Nick Castellanos, like, doing the two fingers up, like, gesture, the pinch fingers, like...
Yes.
Come on.
What are we talking about here?
Italian heritage.
Gabagool. Speaking of, like, just fun, crazy stuff, John, Sunday afternoon, a lot happened in Los Angeles. Not Los Angeles, Anaheim. We're not calling them Los Angeles. That's not Los Angeles.
No.
The Anaheim Angels and the Seattle Mariners. All hell broke loose, John. And yes. I want to get your perspective now that you've had a couple days to think about it and watch it back. And right, Raisel Iglesias and what he did and threw onto the field, the nightmare that continued in Anaheim. But this was one of my favorite fights. I had, like, written down where I was like, because you see it break out, you'll see Twitter start reacting, and you're just like, okay, this is probably nothing. This is a nothing burger. And then you check it out, and you're like, this was delightful. I'm all in on this. Like, here's a take for you guys. Fights are fun. Like, professional fights in sporting events, fun. Guess what? Hockey fights, fun. It's a fun thing to see up close. Baseball fights, it was fun. This was a fun thing. I watched it back multiple times, John. This was a good thing.
But like you said, like, what? Like, the funny thing to me about this, I mean, beyond everything that happened, which was unbelievably funny in entirety, is that or to me anyway, is that, like you said, most baseball brawls,
yeah,
they're not really much. It's just some jawing, like some congregating around the mound. Maybe if you're lucky, somebody gets shoved or something. No, this was a full out fight.
Right. We don't usually get the thing with the Reds pitcher.
You know?
Who was the red pitcher who like went 1-30?
Oh, Amir Garrett? Yeah.
Yes, like, that was the all-time best. That's my all-time favorite.
Yeah, well, because Amir Garrett always wants the smoke, which I genuinely appreciate about him.
But he stared down one versus an entire bench.
Yeah, basically tried. And like Puig, I remember Yasiel Puig doing that too when he was on the Reds with the Pirates. He basically fought the entire team. So, yeah, that's usually what ends up happening, is it's one dude or, like, a handful of dudes, like, trying to scrap, and it doesn't really go anywhere. This one was the kind of brawl where it started up again. Like, that's how you knew these teams were really not happy with each other. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's just, I don't know what my favorite part of it was. I mean, Raisel Iglesias just hucking a canister of sunflower seeds.
That's my favorite. That
was
my favorite.
Really, really good. I'm partial to... Anthony Rendon using his non-injured hand to take swings was really, really funny. Nice presence of mind there not to use his injured right hand.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you saw the clip of Shohei Ohtani getting into the scrum. He didn't throw punches or anything. Actually, I think he kind of helped pull a guy out. But his interpreter was right behind him the entire time, which I really liked.
Yes.
The Angels players who quickly went out onto the field to scoop up all the bubble gum that had been thrown out there by Raisel Iglesias, because he basically grabbed half of the stuff in the dugout and just started throwing it onto the field. Just incredible temper tantrum. Jesse Winker's double birds to the crowd on the way out.
Yes.
Extremely. I'm always a huge fan of double birds on an ejection.
Yes.
Made all the funnier by the fact that he was doing it to the fans behind the visitors' dugout, which means the majority of those people there were Mariners fans. And then, of course, I like the little nice, like, silver lining story of the woman in Arkansas who ordered a pizza to be delivered to Jesse Winker while he was in the clubhouse.
I like that a lot.
They actually, not only did they actually get the pizza delivered, but also the guy who delivered it, he got like hundreds of dollars in tips from just some random folks all over the internet. Just a very, very nice story all the way around there. So, yes, it just really, really funny. Although, the one thing about it, though, is just the discipline afterward, which just, we talked about this, I think, previously with the Josh Donaldson stuff about, like, what is an appropriate suspension for saying something racist, essentially. You know, similarly, like, what is the appropriate suspension, like, it's pretty clear that the Angels sent out Andrew Wentz, the pitcher who both plunked Winker and threw at Julio Rodriguez earlier in the game. It was pretty clear he was out there to do just that. You know, he was a last minute announcement spot starter / opener. I mean, like, the guy. One thing I don't get is how, after what had happened on Saturday with Trout getting a ball up and in that he clearly wasn't happy about. How was Wentz allowed to plunk Winker and not just immediately eject it? That's what I don't understand. Like, the umpires had already issued warnings. I mean, Winker himself said, like, hey, if they had ejected him, I'm not going toward the dugout. Like, you know, there's
right.
Why are the rules not being followed here? And I think on top of that, you know, the MLB handed out their suspensions to a dozen different people. Phil Nevin got the longest one, the Angels manager, at 10 games. But if it really is the case, and it, again, very much seems like it is, that Wentz was instructed to go out there and throw at guys, and that was all he was there to do, how does Nevin not get, like, a month?
Yeah.
Like, that's just not remotely appropriate, you know? And at the same time,
Winker deserves a raise. I think we give him, he gets some money. I mean, he gets some extra money.
The suspension I really don't understand is Julio Rodriguez, who got 2 games for doing absolutely nothing. Apparently MLB thinks he threw a punch, but he's adamant that he didn't, and there's no evidence that he did.
Yes.
But that's the kind of thing. Like, if you want to send a message about this kind of stuff, not necessarily about the brawls, because those just happen. These are just guys who get heated, and these teams have been playing each other basically nonstop for 2 weeks. Like, you know, they clearly got under each other's skin. But if you want to stop the precipitating event leading to the brawl, if you want to stop the headhunting and the intentional throwing, then send out a suspension that matters for that manager. Tell him you're taking the next month off. You're done. You tell a player to go out there and hit someone, you're done.
Right.
Straight up. You know, then this stuff will stop happening. And it's not like, I mean, this wasn't like a Hell and Lovejoy, won't someone please think of the children thing. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look, it already hurt. Not only did it already hurt the Angels in terms of the suspension time they're going to have lost and the fact that they look like a bunch of clowns now after this point, Archie Bradley broke his elbow coming out of the bullpen to try to join the scrum. Now they've lost a reliever for the next, like, 2 months, like a useful reliever. Like, and for what? What did you accomplish here? What was accomplished in all of this? Nothing. Nothing at all. Just that the next time the Angels and Mariners play, that there are almost certainly some Angels players getting drilled in the back.
Yeah.
The cycle will perpetuate. And that's the thing to me that's just stupid, is this idea that, like, if this were just a brawl that happened because some tempers just got flared, that's one thing. But, like, that this is just part of a, you know, retaliation cycle, which to me is just one of the dumbest things in baseball. The whole idea, it's like you have to, you know, every action deserves a reaction of some kind. It's like, that's the kind of stuff that you almost wish MLB could figure out how to stop in advance somehow. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's better, more consistent umpiring when it comes to this stuff. I don't know if it's that the disciplinary folks at MLB just need to be more, they need to hand down more severe punishments or what, but
I think it's an age thing. I think they get aged out. Like, I think the younger guys don't see it this way. And the more you talk to them, like, when you get younger managers in there and you get younger players, I don't think they have that same attitude. I think it's getting phased out gradually. I don't think it will be a part of baseball, like, 20 to 30 years from now.
Probably not. I mean, that's the thing. We already don't see it very much.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I certainly don't have any numbers or anything on how much headhunting was prevalent back in the day, but it did certainly seem like pitchers were more apt or likely to do that back in the day, or to hit guys, or
yes,
you know, just. I think you're right. It does feel like this is not so much a regular thing, which I think is also why something like this happens. Everyone's like, "Whoa! Like, when's the last time we really saw an all-out brawl like this?" You know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that to me is just the part for MLB where it's like, how is the suspension for Phil Nevin in particular not bigger? You know, how if you are, because that's the thing, a 10-game suspension by in and of itself suggests that Nevin had some, that there was some intent behind what happened, because otherwise why is Nevin getting 10 games?
Right.
You know, he didn't do anything else. It's not like he went in there and started like roundhouse.
You're acknowledging that was intentional if you're getting,
yes, you're 10. Acknowledging that Nevin told his player, go out there and hit somebody. So why is that only 10 games? That should be a month. Make it clear that kind of shit doesn't fly anymore, or should never have flown in the first place. But that to me is just the kind of MLB punishments just frequently feel not necessarily arbitrary, but just like they're only 75% of the way thought through. Like, nobody has, like, the same thing with the Donaldson thing, where it's like, okay, if you're suspending him, you're acknowledging that what he said was wrong in some capacity. But if he's only getting a game, then how wrong actually was it? And if you think it was actually really wrong, then why is it not more than, like, that's the kind of thing for me. It's like, you know, it almost feels like MLB just doesn't want to get into the business of trying to, like, parse action in particular, and it's just decided, nope, you're just gonna get 10 games, that's it, we don't feel like thinking about this anymore. I imagine part of it too is they would also like the story out of the news cycle by this point.
That's
because
true.
I really think Major League Baseball does not like it when these, obviously Major League Baseball doesn't,
well, you're
like
getting a lot more
happen.
Smoke if you do a month. Like, there's a lot more that goes into that. There's more stories.
Yeah,
more.
I mean, I guess the one side of it is maybe you're dragging this on longer if one team in particular feels like they were unfairly punished. On the other hand, you're also making it clear to the 29 other teams, you do this kind of shit, you're losing your manager for a month. You know? And even, like, anyone who's involved is going to get penalized.
The White Sox are like, fine.
Yeah, Tony La Russa's like, whatever, I could use a vacation. I don't want to be here anymore anyway.
I was going to say, like, a lot of players around the league are like, that's fine. All right.
I could just picture Tony La Russa doing the Magic Johnson, I'm not going to be here no more.
Yeah.
When reporters ask him about it.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. John, speaking of the Mariners, though, Jerry DePoto, like I said, I think I said on this podcast a couple weeks ago where I was like, I think they're going to be buyers. Like, I think they're just going to keep, like, I saw a stat where their last playoff season, they won over 100 games, and that was, like...
The 2001 team, the 116 win team.
That is insane. They went from 116 wins to missing the playoffs the next year, and then just never have been back.
And,
like,
never coming back.
I want a 30 for 30. I want an oral history on, like, how this happened.
Like, do you want to increase the suicide rate in the Pacific Northwest higher than it already is? Mariners fans are already well aware of how sad the last two decades have been for them. Like, they don't need to have that.
But see, I don't think the national focus is on it enough. I don't think we all collectively understand.
With the Bills having made the playoffs, I believe that the Mariners now have North American professional sports' longest postseason drought.
I think that's right. It's them or the Kings. I think it is them, though.
Yeah, because the Kings made the playoffs
04?
Sometime in those late 2000s, right?
I don't think so. Oh, I think the Kings' drought is like 2004. I could be
wrong. Yeah, it's definitely been a while since the Kangs were a thing worth paying attention to, but... Yeah, I... Poor
16 years for them. So what's 16 minus...
It's 2006.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, like, I mean, look, you're never going to go broke betting that Jerry DePoto is going to do something in particular.
But I like this. This is okay. Like, Carlos Santana didn't give up much for him. And, you know,
no, I mean,
Mariners should be buying. Like, this is a thing where I'm like, do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. One of that is a trade that needed to be made. With Ty France hurt, they don't really have any first base depth. Santana is at the very least capable of standing at first base. He knows where it is. He knows how to catch balls heading that direction. He's had a much better June after a really, really slow start. And really, his last 2 years have been pretty bad. Like, he's very clearly on the back nine, if not, you know, walking up to the green on 18. But
look at John with the golf references.
I know, just dragging out some metaphors here. But
I like it. I just did not see that coming out of you.
But... I think, like you said, they gave up very little to Org Arms, who will probably, you know, they're relievers at best, and they don't really project to be more than, you know, kind of up and down reliever types.
Yeah.
I guess the question, like you said, is, okay, if they're buyers, well, for starters, you know, if they are buyers, they're coming from a really, really low spot. They're 7 games under 500. They're obviously completely out of the AL West race. They're 12 and a half games behind the Astros. They are extremely out of the wild card race as well, which is currently... Toronto, Boston, and I believe the Angels over the White Sox. So they're not, I mean, granted the Angels are below 500 right now. Not the Angels, the Guardians, who are 3 games over 500. So they've got a ways to go, plus they've got the Rays ahead of them, and the Angels, and the White Sox. Like, there is a lot of ground that they have to climb. And no, they have more or less the same. Actually, the Rangers have a better winning percentage, yeah. So they're behind the Rangers too. Their playoff odds right now, we have them at 7.5%. That's pretty awful.
But and if you add more, if you keep adding, like...
And that's the thing. Like, I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea, especially because I don't think that the problems that the Mariners have are necessarily, you know, unfixable. It's just a matter of... And the farm system, I think, is especially given how, you know, up and up, or how on the up it is, it's... You know, it's not as if again, like, you're the Phillies and you're like, well, we're basically trying to exchange like dented pennies for like actual dollar bills. But I guess the question, if you're the Mariners, is, okay, what are our main issues right now in terms of just about everything? And how can we address them? And, you know, you look at that roster, you're like, okay, second base has really not panned out. Adam Frazier has just not worked. You know, they're not really any other better options on the roster. It feels like, is there a cheap, potentially free agent to be second baseman who would make sense for them? I mean, I don't know. I'm looking up now, you know, what free agent second baseman are going to, or who the free agent second baseman are going to be next year. Actually, Frazier is going to be one of them.
So you're not talking about, like, okay, this summer, they could add second baseman they can add at the deadline.
No, I'm talking about this summer, because I'm looking at, you know, who's someone who's on the, because I'm thinking pending free agent is someone who's going to be extremely cheap to acquire, you know, and so that's going to be most appealing to the Mariners, because, like, I think their moves are going to be closer to something like adding guys like Santana, you know.
Well, you could call the Rockies about Reynolds, right? Like, they're just like, all right, he needs a change of scenery, this is not working here.
Are you talking about Brendan Rodgers?
Yeah.
I don't really see Colorado doing that, if only because, I mean, who knows what Colorado is ever going to do at any given
point. But that's the team you call, because you don't know what they're going to do. Like, I'm
calling
teams
where I'm
like...
Sure, no, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. You call them, you see what's up, you know. Maybe whoever picks up the phone doesn't know who Brendan Rodgers is. It's like, yeah, sure,
exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm just looking at this list of second basemen, like, the would-be cheap second baseman who would theoretically be available on... in the trade market, you're looking at like Donovan Solano and Cesar Hernandez and Jed Lowry. Man, this is rough. Okay, so maybe second base is not something they're necessarily going to be able to do anything about. You know, maybe.
Hey, Cincinnati,
maybe
Jonathan India, is it time?
I mean, I boy the I Reds fans are already angry enough with the way everything's played out there. Like, or maybe it's something, it's like, you know, the rotation has been kind of shaky. You know, Logan Gilbert's been great. Marco Gonzalez has been solid. You know, Robbie Ray, I think, is better than what we've seen. George, but like, you know, there are going to be growing pains for George Kirby. Chris Flexen is a really mediocre back of the rotation starter. You know, do you want to do something there? Or do you want to add bullpen help beyond, beyond Paul Sewald and the very good Eric Swanson, and actually Penn Murphy has been very good too. You know, there's not a whole lot of great relief work that's happening in Seattle right now, and that also feels like an extremely Jerry Depoto target, because that's what he has done more than is just pick up back, it's just pick up relievers.
Yeah,
you know, because those guys can always be acquired for cheap. You can usually get them off the off waivers. You can, you know, teams are always looking to move org arms. But I can't see, though, given how far back they are in the standings and the fact that
the lineup hits, though, John, like when you look at it,
I mean, I will
when
say
you look up and down the list, like I would still bet on Henniger figuring it out at some point.
Well, I mean, that's the idea. It's like that's the idea, right? Is it like you can, I mean, Henniger's injured right now. He'll come back at some point. Kyle Lewis, who has a concussion, hopefully he comes back at some point. Maybe at some point down in AAA, you know, that you feel comfortable enough with Jared Kelenic and he actually looks like he's really figured something out. And bring him back up and give him another shot.
Suarez has hit, and Crawford obviously has been a really good player. Like Raleigh's been a good player.
The irony to me here is that a year after, you know, all the fun differential stuff where the Mariners greatly outperformed their Pythagorean record, now they're greatly underperforming it. By Pythagorean record, they should be only a game under 500 as opposed to seven or whatever it is. So, I mean, maybe if you're in the Mariners front office, you look at it and go, hey, we've been better actually than we've played. The West is gone, but the teams in front of us in the wild card chase are not the strongest teams. You know, it's Cleveland, it's Texas, it's
Cleveland
Angels.
Doesn't even want to be there.
And that's the other thing. It's like, are you, you know, the Rays, like those teams also are not going to make huge moves. Or at least I don't really see that happening. Those teams are also probably going to be making moves that are more around the margins than anything else. So, you know, maybe if you do make big enough a move, you can find something there. But like, again, Of all the non-tanking teams in baseball, they have the in the American League, they have the second lowest playoff odds. Only Texas has worse playoff odds than they do. Like that, there's just not really a much of a path here. And granted, that can all shift, you know, with the right move.
I just think you have to try. You just have to break this drought. And you're not like you should be. Like this needs to be a season where they're still challenging for one of the last wild card spots.
I agree.
2 weeks left in the season. They need.
Totally agree. I just think my concern with the Mariners is that work should have been done in the offseason.
Yeah.
And that it's not necessarily too late now to do something about it. But you've you've just knocked out your margin for error. You have to be a fantastic team from here on out to make up the deficit that's been created for you. So that to me also just makes me kind of skeptical, just that feeling of like, I wonder if within the Mariners front office, there's a sentiment of we'll just try again next winter or something. I also do wonder if you're a Mariners fan or if you're Mariners ownership, like, do you want Jerry Depoto being the guy to try to make this happen right now? Or is this something where it's like, if ownership there feels like, you know what, we're moving on from him at the end of the season anyway. Whoever comes in gets carte blanche to just reimagine this team built around Rodriguez and Kelenic and Gilbert and Raleigh and all these other great prospects we have. You know, maybe Depoto's just not the guy to do this kind of thing either. But that's obviously something that, you know, it purely depends on how Mariners ownership feels. And yeah, I mean, I too think the Mariners should try. Like like you said, like it's 20 plus years without being in the playoffs. To miss it, particularly in a year where they've expanded the playoffs, just feels more pathetic than anything else. Like,
right, and it's just the Pythagorean, like being a 500 team, like this is it. This is what it's for, the expanded playoff, for you to go for it and you to really try and get in there and end this drought. Like, I don't know. That would be a bummer to me if they don't make a bigger swing at the deadline. They don't try and do something else. Depoto, you love trades. Do one more big swing. Like, maybe it's Whit Merrifield. I don't know. Like, just do something.
Merrifield, if they feel comfortable with him playing second base, would make a lot of sense.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, that's
or they
an
could
option.
Chuck him in the outfield too. Because I mean, right now, right field is Taylor Trammell, which he's been hitting well. But I, you know, given his struggles and given his plate discipline issues, I don't know that that's something you can really count on going.
You're one slump away from Justin Upton being in right field.
Yeah, and that's nothing says to me like again that the Mariners offseason just did not go remotely as it should have, than the fact that they just brought Justin Upton in randomly.
Yeah.
That's not, it's never a good sign when, like, a dude who the Angels gave up on because he just, like, because they were just like, no, you're just not good enough to be here anymore. Not a good sign when you're fishing through the Angels garbage.
Great career, though. Shout out to Justin.
Oh, no, Justin Upton, a fantastic player, but very clearly.
It's over.
Yeah. Very clearly finished.
What else is finished is the Kansas City Royals playoff odds.
I mean, those were finished from like day one.
It's really sad. Like they've actually just, we were talking before the year, we're like, if things go right, like this is like,
well, one of the things that had to go right was pitcher development. And it's pretty clear at this point that the Royals are not, just do not, they just don't do it well. Like they're too many of these guys, Bubich, Singer, Kowar, you know, all the other young guys that they've had, you know, come through their, like, no one is making progress. There is no development that's happening. And that, if you're a Royals fan, has to be really concerning, because so much of this return to contention was supposed to be built on the prospects. I'm like, yeah, great. Like, NJ Melendez and Nick Prado and Vinny Pasquantino and Bobby Witt. Like, yes, those are all, those guys are all great. But if you can't develop even one decent starting pitcher from that very talented,
you're the Orioles.
You're the Orioles. You're the Orioles from like 5 years ago. That's not really where you want to be. You know, it really, this year, I think the season really does made it feel like the Royals are way further behind in their rebuild than I think most people expected at this point.
Yeah, it's not great, man. I don't know. Like, if I'm a Royals fan, I'm terrified. This is the worst spot to be in, where you've had this rebuild and a lot of guys are ready to get called up and you're like, all right, hey, we might be around 500. We can flirt with one of the second or third wild card spots. Like, we're in a weak division. And then it's like, oh, we're the worst team in the weak division. It's not particularly close. Like, this is a problem. This is one of those where this is the doomsday scenario in KC. And I don't know. Like, but I don't know what Merrifield's trade value is going to look like this summer. Like, what do you do with Greinke? It's not like they have a bunch of pieces they can just move. I mean, I guess Salvi Perez, just because there's just a dearth of talent everywhere at catcher.
Between his injury and the fact that the Royals very clearly want him to be the face of the franchise, at least the older half of the franchise, like I really don't see that happening. Although, on the other hand, like, well, they got to clear out time for MJ Melendez, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they got to figure out if that dude's the catcher of the future. I mean, I just don't see them trading him this summer, and I kind of hard to see them trading him at all. I think they'd probably be more likely to just be like, you're a DH now, Salvi.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you stay healthy. So you're not.
Well, that's coming.
Or you're
right?
only playing like half the season at catcher as opposed to the full season, you know? I mean, I don't know if that's going to work. I don't know if he's like a Yadi Molina type where it's going to be like, no, I'm the starter, and I'm starting, and I'm playing as many games as I can play, but.
Well, the difference with that, too, with Yadi is that, like, they were still good. Like, the Cardinals were still winning baseball games with him doing that.
It's much tougher when you're not any good. But, like, yeah, I think you're right. Like, in terms of guys that they could theoretically move this summer who they, you know, might get something back on, I mean, it's Benintendi's almost certainly going to get moved.
Yeah.
I think there's no real reason for them to keep him around.
But you're just not getting anything of consequence with
Benintendi. No, and that's the thing. Like, you're trading an outfielder with a corner outfielder with a sub 400 slugging percentage. That's just not worth very much in the market. Similarly, I mean, Michael A. Taylor is a fantastic defender. He's been a well above average hitter this season, but is that someone who's really going to bring a whole lot back? You know, is Hunter Dozier really going to return anything if you've decided that you're not into Hunter Dozier anymore? Is Brad Keller? Brad Keller's only 26 years old? No way. The dude pitches like he's 33. You're right. Like, there really is not a whole lot of kind of movable talent on this roster that they can, you know, they can ideally exchange for really anything of use. Mm. I think, you know, like Greinke, I wouldn't, if they try. Tried to trade Greinke, I wouldn't be surprised if he just said no and retired, like just straight up said I'm not going anywhere else and retired. I don't really see. I guess that's the thing. It's like, what do the Royals need to do going forward in order to be better beyond develop their pitching better? You know, because it's like, what it's that sense of like, okay, I don't think they're necessarily going to change course in terms of they're not suddenly just going to blow everything up they have now and try again with something else. I imagine the commitment is still there to the core of Witt and now Pasquantino and Melendez and eventually Nick Prado and you know, the other guys in their system. But it like you said, this is a bad place to be, and it's not really clear how they get out of here, because again, it just, the pitching on that team is awful.
Yeah,
absolutely awful. And it's not, this isn't like the Orioles of yesteryear. It is like the Orioles of yesteryear in terms of just, you have all these young guys you just don't know how to develop. The only difference is they just don't have the old guys also on the pitching side of things who are just useless veterans that they bring in to soak up innings beyond Greinke, who I will never call useless. But again, like I said, Singer, Bubich, Lynch, his name's just escaped me, Jackson Kowar, you know, these guys shouldn't be struggling as badly as they're struggling.
Right.
You know, they're really talented arms. Why are they not good? Why are they not better? You know, and I think I know Dayton Moore is not in charge anymore, and we've talked about that. I don't necessarily see a shakeup coming, but I would be curious in particular about Mike Matheny and what his status is after this season. I don't necessarily know the Royals would blame particularly any of this on Matheny, but if your young players are not producing, like, I don't know. I mean, if nothing else, I think, and not even expect, I would hope that this offseason brings up some kind of shakeup with regards to the way the Royals do their pitching development, because I guess that's kind of the thing. Like, we'll get to this offseason and we'll again be talking about, oh, the Royals, maybe a dark horse 500 team. It's not going to happen until they get more out of their pitching. It's just simply not going to happen. And until we start seeing signs that, oh, they figured out how to make their pitchers better, kind of the same way we started to see now in Baltimore, it's like, oh, they actually know how to develop these guys. These guys are actually league average or better starters. Until we see that in Kansas City, I really don't think that there's any reason to expect them to be any better, basically, than what they currently are, which is a 70-win team that's just has no pitching whatsoever.
Go Royals.
Go Royals. Ooh, boy.
We'll end on this, John. So there's a good piece in Fangraphs this week on Logan Webb. You're not going to believe this. The Giants, they're doing more good stuff with pitchers. It's what the Giants do.
It's their specialty.
It's their specialty. Is it an Andrew Bailey thing? Who knows? You're not going to believe this. Ben Clements is also responsible for a good, thoughtful, interesting piece on Fangraphs.com. The people are surprised. People are surprised about this, but this was great. What did you make of it, and what do you make of Logan Webb and his resurgence with the Giants this year?
So I think what the point Ben makes is a really good one. Is, well, 2 points he makes that I really like. The first is that, you know, it can feel sometimes like, you know, especially with the way the Giants have played this season, which is to say they haven't been as good as they are last year, this idea that, like, oh, you know, the players they've developed are fine, but they're not great. It's like, no, Logan Webb is a great pitcher. And which leads into the second point that Ben made, is he's a great pitcher in a way that almost no one else is doing, which is to say he's a sinker first pitcher who gets strikeouts. And, you know, if you read the piece by Ben, you know, he explains exactly how it is that Webb's, and if anything, what I like so much about the piece is it's just one of those things where it's like, every piece of what Webb is or what Webb does, his mechanics, his arsenal, his, you know, they all come together to make this work explicitly in a way for him that it probably doesn't work for anyone else. At least not without them, or at least unless it's a pitcher who has Webb's exact same delivery and arsenal and pitch shapes and all that other fun stuff. So that particularly what I like from Ben's piece is just that little bit of like, hey, this all came together for this dude, and the result is a guy who throws a sinker who also gets strikeouts. Like, that's wild. That doesn't happen. I guess the other side of that is, okay, is that something that's replicable? Is that something that, you know, and I don't know enough about Webb pre-transformation, so to speak, to get a sense of like how exactly the Giants built him up. But what I'd be curious about is if that's something that you can, if it can be replicated, because I'm curious too. Part of that is, as Ben mentions in his piece, is just thanks to the fact that Webb has a kind of drop and drive delivery, that his ball stays a little more shallow when it comes through the strike zone, and thus hitters think it's going to dip a little more than it does, and that's what gives his sinker such value, basically, is that he can throw it for a called strike pretty much whenever he feels like. That's obviously not something most pitchers can do. Sinker is a hard pitch to control, particularly if you are coming for more of a standard over the top delivery. So yeah, I would be very curious to see. I think that's what I want to see going forward is, okay, and I know teams know this stuff, but it's like, we know this stuff, like, can you essentially build another Logan Webb? Can the Giants do this again? It's like, and if anything, like I said, it's a testament to Giants player development that they basically built this guy who can excel in this one particular way that almost no one else can do. And it makes him both unique and very, very good. It's one of those things where it's like, The thing to me about it is it's being able to see all the various pieces come together for a guy in that way, and how kind of just straight up smart and clever it is to have a pitcher where it doesn't feel like what he's doing is, it's not a fluke, it's not out of the ordinary, it's just working to his strengths. The Giants found a way to work to all of his strengths and combine them into one to make him as good as possible. That's really cool, and I think that is a testament to how good this current Giants front office is in doing that stuff. And I think if you're a Giants fan, even if you're not feeling super great about this season for a variety of totally defensible reasons, you probably do still have to feel good. It's like, hey, our team did that. Like, we, like, they made that happen. Like, we are being, we are run by some very smart people. And I think it's a good sign, too, that, you know, the Giants, you know, for as much as I think a lot of us last year were looking around and going, how the hell did they win 107 games? Okay, maybe they're not going to win 100. They're definitely not going to win 107 games again. But it doesn't feel like this, like the Giants as a franchise are a fluke either. It feels like they have pretty well transitioned into their next stage of contention and front office smartness, for lack of a better word, intelligence. And that, again, you got to feel like the right people are in charge, at least when it comes to the player development side of things.
Absolutely, absolutely. John, what can the good folks check out from you and everything else on Fangraphs.com this week?
Well, you already mentioned Ben's piece on Logan Webb, which is up now and very good. Definitely encourage people to read it. Jay Jaffe wrote about the Jesse Winker, about the brawl and everything surrounding Jesse Winker lately, if you want a GIF-heavy version of that. One thing in particular coming this week that I think folks are going to like, particularly if you are a KBO fan, our Justin Choi will be doing a half-season review of the current KBO season. Part one is coming tomorrow, so check that out if you're at all interested in the KBO, if you're just curious what's going on in Korea. I know that KBO probably picked up a few extra American fans during the 2020 season.
Do you remember that week?
Yeah, where we all woke up
at
like wild. We all woke up at like 4 a.m. to watch Korean baseball.
Or some of us sickos just were awake and
or just stayed
awake
up all the way. Yeah, I know. I genuinely enjoyed watching some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely encourage people to check that one out if you're at all interested in that. But yeah, again, as we transition into July, as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline in particular, come on over to Fangraphs. We'll be analyzing it all, writing about it all, covering it all. And if you're not a member, come join us as a member. Help support our site, help support the cool work that we do, and maybe buy yourself a t-shirt while you're at it. We got cool t-shirts now. We've always
going
had
forward.
Cool t-shirts.
Yeah.
We've definitely got cool t-shirts now.
Good pods.
Good
you got,
pods.
You got a lot of good
shout
pods.
Out Effectively Wild. Shout out Fangraphs Audio.
Very good stuff. Very good stuff. Go subscribe. If you're a friend of the Chase Thomas podcast and you're not subscribed to Fangraphs.com, then what are you doing? What are you doing?
What's wrong with you, you idiot?
Idiot.
Yeah, I gotta get the real Dr. Steve Brule. You doofus. What is it, Goofus or Doofus, he says? I can't remember. I've already butchered the name.
Goofus. I don't know. Goofus is odd. I don't know. It's probably Doofus. Doofus is a good word. We should bring Doofus back. I like Doofus. John Taylor, follow you on Twitter. J.A. Taylor, as always. And I will talk to you next week.
Adios.
All right, y'all, that'll do it for the Wednesday, June 29th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast. Thank you for making the Chase Thomas Podcast part of your daily listen here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Make sure if you're an Apple Podcast or Spotify listener and you have not already done so, make sure that you leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That is indeed how you listen. It helps other people find the show, and it helps this show continue to grow and grow. I appreciate it as always. Still just a jam-packed week of pods coming down the pike here as we wrap up June. June just flew by. Pretty wild. Pretty wild. So all kinds of great content on the horizon this week, so look out for that. Make sure you subscribe on your podcast player of choice to the Chase Thomas Podcast so that you don't miss any of the content that's coming down the pike this week. I like that expression, coming down the pike. All right, that'll do it for today. I hope you all have a great rest of your Wednesday. And yeah, Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
it.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.